Let's start what we have come into the room to do.
Hello, welcome back to the Fresh Ubuntu Pad. Excuse me. It's a good thing we're raw and unedited. Everyone's going to hear that. This is the Fresh Ubuntu Podcast. Welcome once again. My name is Harlem, and with me today are two very special people. Of course, Peter is always here. Peter Nicolaitis, my co-host. How's it going, Peter?
Going fine. How about you?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing the usual, the work, the taking the kids to school and all that kind of stuff. Lately, I've been reading listening to the audiobook from Timothy Ferris, The 4-Hour Workweek, and, been getting into that lately. But other than that, everything's all so-so. Anything on your side?
Everything's fine here. I've been dabbling a little more with Ubuntu again the last few days. I kind of hadn't really done much stuff Linux-y over the last few weeks, like during our hiatus. And so I've been fiddling around, coming up with some ideas for some tech segments. And last week I finally got around to setting up my father's Christmas present, which was the Everix GOS GPC.
That's right. Yep.
So that was kind of fun. Went very smoothly, a lot smoother, more smoothly than I expected it to. And I fiddled around a little bit with KDE 4, very little. And I've restarted my quest to get World of Warcraft running under Ubuntu. So that's what I've been up to.
Well, those are the things that count here, you know, getting that World of Warcraft going. I know you're a big World of Warcraft fan. This week, I have a special guest. One of my listeners is on board today. His name is Kyle. Kyle Skrinak. And how you doing today, Kyle?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much. Excellent pronunciation. I see we've got a triumvirate of great last names here.
That's right. We are the triumvirate. You hail from Apex, North Carolina, which I think David Yates is over there in that area. Isn't that right, Peter?
That is correct.
He's
a neighbor over here. I've been meaning to say hi to him. I know he does a couple of user group things.
That's right.
But we've got a lot of people here, a lot of activity. You know, Red Hat comes out of here.
That's right. Okay. I spent a little time in North Carolina. I was in the Marine Corps and stationed over at Camp Lejeune. I believe that's a little southwest of where you're at.
That's right. We get a lot of the people come through our airports, the soldiers. Jarheads, what is it?
Jarheads, yes.
Yeah. Marines, et cetera.
Marines.
Yeah, I support our troops. Don't take that the wrong way.
Yeah, no problem.
But we have Camp Pendleton, Lejeune, all that good stuff. Fayetteville.
That's right. The other one is Fort Bragg over there too. Fort Bragg.
Fort Bragg.
Yep.
That's
right. So, well, Kyle, since you're new to the pod, well, you're not necessarily new, but the first time you've been on the podcast, as I said earlier before, this is going to be raw and unedited. That is my New Year's resolution. So I thought maybe we could play a little, audience participation game. And so whenever one of us says I think, you know, maybe the audience should do something. What do you think, Peter?
I'll take a drink.
Well, Peter wants to take a drink, but I was thinking more like, you know, honking your horn if you're in the car or shouting something, you know, while you're listening.
Get the electrodes hooked up.
Getting electrodes hooked up. And
I've been able to wire so a circuit will actually administer a gentle stimulus in case you guys make any English grammatical errors.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, actually, because I heard on Buzz Out, no, it wasn't Buzz Out Loud, sorry, on one of the CNET podcasts from last week. I'm playing catch up. I'm way behind. I think I've been playing too much Warcraft. But anyway, they were talking about this exercise bike, the Compex exercise bike, which has electrodes. And the theory is, or I guess what it does, is that it stimulates allegedly 99% of the muscles in your legs. So you get a really, you know, complete workout on your muscles. So I'm looking at getting one of those. It sounds really cool. But, you know, basically I could hop on the bike when we podcast and just, you know, turn it on as soon as I say or ah.
Yeah. So, I don't know, maybe we'll have the users or the listeners email us in with a suggestion for what they have done or what they did whenever one of us said, you know, or and we'll reveal that to our listeners on the next podcast. So I was thinking maybe they could touch their nose every time we said or ah, but instead I will just leave it up to the users. So, there I go again. Speaking of peripherals, I have a article here from shacknews.com about the healing power of Guitar Hero, since we were sort of on that vein anyway. I'm just going to go ahead and introduce this. And remember last week's podcast when we talked about that guy who emailed in about folks with disability and getting peripherals that work for people with, say, you know, one arm or one leg?
How could I forget the person who dubbed me an open source legend?
That's right. Well, Shack News has an article about the healing power of Guitar Hero. Apparently they use it for things such as stroke victims and people who have been have disabilities resulting from strokes. So just wanted to throw that in. And also a user later on, I'll introduce this later on, but give you a little preview right now. A user emailed or left a comment on the blog at freshubuntu.org and gave us some links, so I'm going to introduce that during the user feedback segment of the podcast. So what do you say we get on with the news, Peter?
Let's do it.
Okay. First
you
off,
go first.
Okay. I'll just go ahead and go, the first thing I want to mention right now is that Direct to Dell has decided to release Ubuntu 7.10 on another one of their hardware machines, I guess. However, there's a little catch. I'm reading from directtodell.com, and it says Ubuntu 7.10 on the XPS M1330. Ubuntu is coming to customers in Spain. Now, they are offering this configuration only to the folks in Germany, the UK, and France, and Spain, and not to the folks in the US. So we'll have to wait just a little bit to get that offering. So I think they're saying from the site, it says for US customers, you'll have to hold on a week or so. And what do you think about that?
Well, that's the new, I don't remember if that XPS 1330 is a new machine or not, but you know, it's basically, it's a beefy little laptop, you know, weighs like 4 or 5 pounds or so. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just, it's another offering, another way to get Ubuntu from Dell. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. I haven't heard a lot of complaints about them not offering it in the U.S. And so, I don't know. You bought a new Dell, Kyle, didn't you?
That's right. Excuse me. I just bought a 1520 there, Inspiron. And I got I was looking at the 1420 at first. That's their official Ubuntu Blessed machines. And actually, let me backtrack a little bit. I'm normally a Mac user, and when I say that, I use three platforms. Mac is remains my favorite, but I'm not unhinged about it. I started using, I might be unhinged, that's another matter, but I started using Ubuntu about 2 years ago after checking a bunch of distros out, and I thought Ubuntu did a nice job of making it easy for people like myself who don't have a lot of time recompiling code or any of that sort of Gentoo digressions that you can get into.
That's a dirty word on this podcast.
Or Gentoo, well.
You said it again.
So anyway, I'm getting a gentle shock right now at the moment. So anyhow, I was looking at, I've been using one of the great things about Ubuntu, of course, is you could use used hardware. And I've essentially had a free laptop that I've been running Ubuntu on. Well, finally reached a point where there's a hardware failure, and to fix it would have been $250. I looked at the different offerings out there, and I figured, well, let's reward Dell for embracing Ubuntu. Linux, really. Linux would have been fine by me, but they have Ubuntu, which is even better. And then I looked at the refurbs, and I ended up with a very inexpensive computer. I'm still setting it up, and right now the sound isn't working. Sound's a little bit of a bear. I even compiled ALSA driver, the latest driver, which is not listed. And I'm still going through that. So that's a little bit of the downside, you know, as opposed to a Mac user where you don't have to do any of this. But I've been very happy. Dell is what it is. It's not a sexy shopping experience, but I didn't want that. I don't want to spend 20 to 40% on top of the hardware just so I can be massaged.
Right. Nice insight. Nice insight. It's okay, Peter, go on.
Okay, our next news article comes straight from Canonical, and that is that Ubuntu 6.06.2 long-term support has been released. So this is just a refresh to 6.06, and there are a couple of fixes. They've added a couple of little tweaks to the installer, a little bit of better hardware detection, a couple of little improvements. But overall, it's really just a way to get the latest version of 6.06 with all the patches and things rolled up into the single ISO image. So if you're like me and you're lazy and you have the same 6.06 ISO image that you've had for, what, a year and a half now, the first thing you have to do is do like an apt-get update, and you wait around for a couple of hours while it downloads and applies all the stuff. Okay, I'm exaggerating. It doesn't really take a couple hours, but it takes a significant amount of time, and you can chop some of that down. This is sort of like, for you Windows folks, it's like installing a
service pack.
Yeah, a slipstreamed install of a service pack. So if you have an XP CD, for instance, and it has Service Pack 1 or Service Pack 2 already included, you don't have to go and download the service pack and all the patches. So same idea.
Okay.
And that is available. I guess that's the default now. If you go to download 6, Ubuntu Dapper Drake, that's the one you would get. So
Dapper
no reason
Drake
to download the older versions. But frankly, I think this is good and all, but I'm really more interested in the Hardy long-term release, which, we're only a couple months away now, right?
Right, we are only a couple months, and it's only going to be the Ubuntu Hardy Heron that's going to be released as an LTS and not KDE, which we've been doing a lot. I have been doing a lot of information seeking about the KDE and some of the reasons why. And I believe that there's an article saying that that KDE and the makers and the developers of KDE are developing their own replacement to Compiz Fusion, which possibly might be why Ubuntu is not going to make it a long-term release. So who knows what's going on with that? But they don't apparently do not want to use Fusion as their composite manager, and they want to do it themselves. So.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of KDE 4, we actually had a couple of articles on that this week too, right?
Yep, we did.
You want to do yours first?
If I can find mine.
Or I can do mine first.
go ahead and do yours first, and then...
Mine was actually just a little tutorial, and I actually followed this. What it is just a simple little tutorial on how to install KDE 4 on Gutsy. And it's pretty straightforward. All you have to do is add your repositories, add the KDE 4 repository to your sources.list file, do an apt-get update, and then tell it to apt-get install KDE 4, a couple of KDE libraries, and boom, it goes. One thing that was interesting, it does install a ton of dependencies and stuff, but this is not doing the full Kubuntu desktop. So if you're relatively happy with the applications that come along with regular Ubuntu, and you just want to stick with that, but you want to run the KDE desktop, but not necessarily get a completely separate set of applications, you can just install KDE. Now, I don't generally run KDE or Kubuntu, so I'm not sure, but I'm assuming that if you are a Kubuntu user, you could follow this and you keep all the same apps that you're used to, but you'd have the latest KDE instead of 3.5.
Yep, and which I actually downloaded the Kubuntu package. Excuse me, I installed the Kubuntu desktop over my Ubuntu installation, and I'm getting refamiliarized again with Kubuntu and the KDE 3.5 package. And then, the release of KDE 4.0 came out, and now I'm kind of wanting to also install this on top of my Ubuntu package. So thanks for bringing up that link, and we'll post that link on freshubuntu.org. And that is from Softopedia. Isn't that right?
Yep. Softpedia.
Softpedia. And there's also a really good one on How to Forge as well. So
yep.
ARS, for those of you who are wondering what KDE 4.0 is all about, Ars Technica has written a little review of it. This was published on January 20th by Ryan Paul. And from the sounds of it and the looks of it, they have a couple of screenshots here. It does look a bit more appealing than what I'm used to with the usual Ubuntu desktop, and it you know, my penchant for brown on a screen is, so I'm not too fond of it. So in any case, I do like the user interface. It looks really nice. I am waiting, though, until all the bugs are fixed. And I may even wait until the release of Kubuntu, Hardy Heron. Kyle, have you used the Kubuntu package?
As a matter of fact, I was on my old machine. I had some memory concerns, and I started to use more and more KDE packages like Quanta. On Peter's recommendation, I checked out Kling status. You know how they use that K.
Oh, yeah, they love it.
And finally, I figured, what the hey, let's just go ahead, and I loaded the full Kubuntu, and I rather liked it. I would give KDE points. It's a nicely integrated experience. The only thing I didn't care for KDE, and you can change this, was that its default mode, it's kind of like being in a playground with too much coffee. The user interface is just, it's a little, I don't like a lot, you know, despite being a Mac user, I don't like a lot of eye candy. I could actually criticize a few Mac apps because they get too far on the eye-friendly or I don't know, the usability feedback kind of stuff. So I like KDE. Now with my new computer, I'll probably wait a little bit, get the sound thing fixed. But I like these, the URL that I'm checking out for the KDE 4.0. It looks very handsome. And one of the things I liked about KDE, again, is that unlike GNOME, which is very, so being open source, it doesn't feel like someone's in charge. KDE does nicely integrate together. I give them a lot of points for that.
Yep. I do too. I actually look, it looks very much like they all sat down and kind of said, well, I'm going to do this. And somebody said, well, before you do that, you better check this out and make sure it integrates well. So, anywho, let's go ahead and move on. You have something here about the Google Borg. Is that right, Pino?
Google.org?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I put that in just because of the, you know, 6 degrees of John O'Bacon. We know somewhere there's a connection to Google.
Of course.
And I just thought it was kind of interesting that last week Google announced their charitable wing, their philanthropic division, which is going to be doing some, you know, the good work. I thought it was interesting because I know I've kind of harshed on Google a little bit in the past, and I was having lunch with my friend Scott, not Wilsey, but other Scott, yesterday, and we both have, you know, these concerns about Google, and Google knows everything about you and probably knows more about you than you know about you now. But despite all that, you know, he was telling me how he has drunk the Kool-Aid and he has moved all of his email, all of his domains and everything over to Gmail. And but anyway, when I heard about the Google.org, I backed off ever so slightly on my fear and paranoia of Google. Because they are, you know, they've got an ambitious plan, and following in the heels of, you know, like the Gates Foundation and Rockefellers and all these other folks with more money than God, the Google Foundation is going to try to find ways to help develop renewable energy sources, to help prevent things like global warming, and a lot of other really noteworthy and noble ambitions. So, you know, if you want to check out all that info, it's all at google.org as opposed to google.com. And, you know, I applaud them for this. So I'm not sure I really forgive them and go back on all the bad things I've said about their privacy policy things that I've disagreed with. But, you know, I think this is a step in the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree, too, that more companies are leaning towards this way. And God knows that more corporation could probably participate in charitable giving. But what I thought was kind of unique, or what you told me, was that your friend transferred everything to Google domains. Is that what you said?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
He just got eaten up by the Google.
He has drunk the Google Kool-Aid now.
I don't feel so bad about using Google. I think I can trust them. I've used them for years. I have a Gmail account, and I have a couple of Gmail accounts, one for Fresh Ubuntu, one for my own personal needs and that kind of thing. I don't use their Google Documents yet. You know, I really don't want to put all my documents out there. It's not, first of all, they're uninteresting. And, you know, I like to have a physical hard drive with my stuff on it. So it's just a personal preference of mine. I think the entities that we should watch out for are like social media networks or social networks, you know, like Facebook. I'm a user of Facebook, but lately I've backed off from it a little because of the bad press, first of all, and then the just all the information on there is almost overwhelming. I mean, Kyle, you're here. I have your Facebook profile up, and quite honestly, and this is not a spite against you, but quite honestly, this is more than I should know about a person living halfway across the country.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that because I'm very mindful. Everything you see up there, well, nearly everything you see up there, you know, I haven't flowcharted this. It is done with the idea that any one of my potential customers could do a Google on Kyle Skrinek, and what would they find? To dovetail back to the Google thing is, with great respect to what Peter has said about Google's privacy policy, I guess what I'm not worried about is there's so much information to coalesce that it's really impotent unless you were to meaningfully bring it together. And I don't have any, I haven't really given thought about what kind of horsepower the NSA has to bring it all together and say, well, we're going to take down Apex because of Kyle's. Yeah, that's a silly way to put it. But I haven't worried about it. I think it's good that Peter says what he says because we need that check on activities of people that bring this information together. I have used Google Documents. I like, I don't use it for business, but what's nice about it is it's not stuck to a platform.
Right.
So I could start a document on Linux. When I'm at one of my customer sites, I can use Windows. And then when I get home on my Mac, I could finish it up. It's nice mm-hmm. to be free of a platform. That's been very convenient. But, you know, with Facebook, I actually had an experience in the late 90s when my wife was pregnant with our first child. Someone had taken that picture that I had put up on my website, and this is when I was very naive about what the internet meant, and had said, here's a jewelry for pregnant women, and here's a picture of a pregnant woman.
Whoa.
Yeah. So, and then he wrote me an email. Isn't this great?
Wow.
And, you know, so I just stepped back slowly so as not to cause concern and, you know, pulled my site down. And ever since then, I've been mindful of the fact that everything you have up online, you know, is could be a problem when you do the Google and you put your name in.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I Twittered an article, I bookmarked an article on USA Today last week about this, which was about a couple of folks who, this woman who posted on her Facebook profile that, you know, she was married, she changed her status on Facebook, and she posted a picture of her wife, and she had said she'd never said anything out in public, yada yada. But she was astounded when she got an email from one of her coworkers who was not a Facebook friend and, you know, commented on the pictures of the wedding. And it just amazes me. It reminds me of years ago, kids were getting irate that their parents were reading their blogs or were looking at their MySpace pages.
Yeah.
I'm like, I can't believe that, you know, people are this stupid. You're putting it out on the internet, folks. It's mm-hmm. there for the public, for the whole world to see, you know. And that's the kind of stuff that, you know, if it's posting it on a website, that's one thing. You know, if you post something on your blog or on your Facebook profile or whatnot, you know, it's out there. It's in public. You just got to know that. But what you don't expect is the stuff that you think is going to be private, you know, which is not. And you know, I'm not talking about anything, you know, like surfing those websites or anything like that. But the other day, I hit freshubuntu.org, and the banner ad at the top of the page was health insurance options in Vermont. Well, you can't tell me that wasn't a targeted ad. You know, they're looking and they're saying, oh, this is somebody coming from Vermont. And by all, you know, it's quite likely that they were tracking, you know, because of I use the Google infrastructure heavily. And they were probably saying, oh, this is this individual. I'm sure they don't, you know, well, they probably don't know, but they may know that it's, you know, some guy named Peter. And, you know, I just had a tiny bit of a Big Brother moment there for a second. I was like, oh, look at that. You know, they're watching. And, you know, that kind of power could be used, you know, maliciously or
yeah.
just, you know, for
Absolutely.
The wrong purposes.
Yeah, I agree with you. But, you know, I mean, I really honestly think that online privacy is dead. It's no longer, mm-hmm. it's, you know, that's just my feeling about it. And quite honestly, along with what Kyle was saying, be very judicious about what you put out on Facebook accounts, on Twitter even, you know, even just random tweets, you know, it could,
right.
you know,
yeah.
come back
but
and haunt you.
to take that a step further, though, my point is that you have to be careful with your email and with those documents.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're using Gmail, your stuff it's not out there to the same degree, but it is accessible by people that you never thought might have access to your stuff.
Yep.
So that's the real concern.
That's a really good point. You don't know who at Google is bored and decides to take a look. Now I imagine that Google has some sort of auditing mechanism to make sure that it's secure within their system. I'm sure of that, right?
Yeah. I'm not so sure, but...
You don't sound so sure.
Exactly. So that's why, I don't have... I wouldn't have any NDA kind of stuff on Google, but, there's a lot of the middle-level stuff. If it were to fall in the competitor's hands, I'm not compromised. The docs, the Google Docs is nicely done, and I give them a lot of kudos for it. It's very convenient, and I like it. And I think, Peter, you're spot on. You don't want to put stuff that would compromise, be it your professional or your personal information.
Yep.
That's just common sense. If anything, people should start looking at encrypted drives.
Yep.
I accept one thing, though, is if you're posting any information that could compromise your criminal behavior, then this does not apply. They will never find it, so it's okay to use it for that.
Just so I'm safe.
What criminal behavior?
What are you talking about?
It wouldn't work for you, but you criminals out there who are using it, it's perfectly safe. They will never find it. Just so you know.
All right. You have an article here.
Probably beat that topic to death.
No, we could. We totally could. You have an article here about Wooby, and we had talked about Wooby before.
Yeah, Wooby's old news. I just posted this to prove that Cory Doctorow does not listen to our podcast.
He doesn't.
Nope. Over
he
on
should.
Boing Boing, he should. He's an Ubuntu user, but anyway, over on Boing Boing, a couple days ago, Cory Doctorow blogged about Wooby, and I just wanted to put this out there to say that hey, we're ahead of the curve, man. We beat Boing Boing by like months. And those of you who don't remember it, go back and check out Wooby, but it's the way to install Ubuntu via Windows, and it's an actual installer that runs under Windows. It's easily the simplest way that I have found to get Ubuntu running on your system if you are starting with Windows. Yeah. Great little project.
If interested, go to woobyinstaller.com. What's the website?
Let me double check. I believe it is woobyinstaller.com. Wooby-installer.org.
There's not even a link on Boing Boing.
No, they didn't.
Good job.
Put it there. Yeah, it is. It is. I remembered it right. Yes. Wooby-installer.org. And Wooby is spelled W-U-B-I.
All righty.
Thanks to your guys' discussion on Wooby ways back, I used it to try out Ubuntu on a system, and I was able to figure out that I couldn't install Ubuntu on it because there was conflicts with the motherboard. So if anyone's thinking of doing this, it's a pretty safe way without blasting out your hard drive.
Oh, excellent. Mm-hmm.
Yep. One note is the Wooby apparently still is only at 7.04 at Feisty. So if you did want to have the latest, you would have to do a dist upgrade on that. But I did that fairly successfully from Feisty to Gutsy. So let's hope that they've got those bugs worked out. So just a note.
Excellent. Let's go on to the Linux.com article about troubleshooting with Apache logging.
Sorry, that wasn't meant for the podcast. That was just that was unrelated.
This is an unrelated news item, which I will discard right at this moment.
It's interesting. If you're interested, go check out my...
It looks interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
I mean,
go check out my delicious bookmarks on the topic, but doesn't really directly relate to Ubuntu.
I was going to ask you how that was going to relate. Yeah. I was going to have you play the 6 Degrees of Jono Bacon, but
yes.
You would probably have a pretty hard time, as would I. So.
Oh, I'm sure I could do it.
There's got to be a way. So let's go to the next one. Before we go on, though, Peter mentioned his delicious bookmarks, and that is at delicious.com/Nikolaitis/FreshUbuntu, and there's just all kinds of links about Ubuntu and the podcast. So, hey, Microsoft Microsoft has just ended its detente of virtualization. The ban has been lifted, as reported by ARS Technica.
Yeah, basically, if you may remember that when Vista came out, their license agreement specifically said that you cannot run anything but Vista Ultimate in a virtual machine. And, you know, basically this means, like, you know, you folks with VMware Fusion or Parallels or, you know, any virtual machine, if you want to run Vista, you got to pay the $500 and get the premium version, you know, the ultimate version. I guess somebody at Microsoft is starting to grow a brain, and they realize that that's kind of dumb. And so they got rid of that idea, and it's now okay for you to run Vista Home Basic and Home Premium and all the other Vistas, I suppose. I don't know about that. They only specifically say Home Basic and Home Premium. But you do not have to buy the super expensive versions, although in my opinion, all of the Vistas are rather expensive.
Yeah, they are, and we don't really need to have them all be that expensive. Secondly, now that Bill Gates is retired officially, do you think we'll see a much nicer Microsoft?
I don't really know. That may happen, but it really wouldn't make much sense if it does, because if his whole thing is going off to do the whole charitable thing and, you know, save the world and cure AIDS and cancer and stuff with the Gates Foundation, I mean, if he's such that nice a guy there, why hasn't he been so nice over in the corporate side all this time?
Yeah.
Well, you know what's funny about this, though, is Vista, so there's basically a market rebellion against Vista, and I guess Microsoft's going to stem that by going to the 5% Apple market.
Right.
it's just so absurd, you know. So I bought this Dell 1520. It comes with Vista, and I couldn't rip it off soon enough. And I've been, anecdotally, I've been talking to people. Now, you might think as a Mac fanboy, that's how you do things. But if it really did an improvement to XP, which is possible, and I don't mean that in a negative sense, just like anything can improve, that's great. But Vista, it's a resource nightmare. I wouldn't want to run it on my VMware Fusion, because it's just too much. It's too much overhead, and it doesn't deliver anything.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We talked about this a couple of, maybe in the last podcast or two podcasts ago. It is very resource intensive. Seems to be that the 2 gigabyte RAM is probably the perfect choice for it, and the faster the processor, the better. You know, and that is just way it puts the hardware requirements out of the budgets of many people. So, anyway. Yep.
The last news item that I have is that as of last week, Sears has announced that they will be carrying cheap pre-installed Linux PCs. Now, these, I guess, I would have to assume that this is in response to Walmart carrying the $199 EverX models, carrying the GOS. These guys are going to be running FreeSpire on them. And they're powered by Celeron chips, and they've got a $199 price after rebate. FreeSpire, as you know, is built on Ubuntu, which makes it directly related to the podcast, so we don't need to play 6 degrees on this one. And it includes some legal proprietary codecs. So out of the box, it can play Windows media formats, MP3s, RealPlayer, and QuickTime stuff. So it's got some interesting stuff. And they've got the access to their click and run repository, so you can get different commercial softwares that you may have to normally download and not be able to go through a package manager to get it. So another option for an ultra cheap PC that you can get with Linux installed is out there.
Cool. It looks like the hardware is sort of an upgrade from what the Walmart PC is. Is that?
Yeah, I think the GOS box, the EverX box, came with, I think it was 1/2 gig of RAM, and these have 1 gigabyte. These have Intel Celeron processors instead of the VIA processors.
Right.
So,
yeah. Nice.
But they do note that these machines sell for like $280-some-odd, and then you have to send in a rebate. So if you are averse to rebates like I am, you may want to go with a different option.
Still.
Have you guys seen any of these in the wild? I don't mean this model, but, you know, we've got the Triple E, we've got the, mm-hmm. you know, we've got all these offerings now that are, what, below $400. I'm just curious. I haven't seen any out there.
I actually purchased the GOS box, the EverX box, for my dad.
And I am going, I am going to be reviewing a Triple E, and it's supposed to be here today, that I had bought for a friend. He's going to let me review it, and then I'm going to ship it out later, but I'll be reviewing one and posting it on my blog. So they are out there. They're just very hard to come by, and I know I've had to wait 6 weeks for the Asus to get to my house. So
Hey, before you finish doing that, can I, when you get it, can we chat about that a little bit offline?
I'd be curious
to some questions direct about it. And
Absolutely. We can even do a podcast about it too. So
beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, the reason I ask is I'm toying with the idea of getting my own. Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of torn. I don't know if you were following me on Twitter right up before Christmas time, but I was sort of torn whether I wanted to ask for the EPC or the Nokia N810. Mm-hmm. And after doing a little more research, I decided I didn't want either of them right now.
Right.
The N810 just didn't have some of the functionality that I really need in a PDA. And the EPC, I heard rumors that they're going to be coming out with one with a higher resolution screen sometime in the very near future.
Right. And 8 gigabytes, too.
Exactly. So before I made that plunge, I mean, with my luck, the day after it arrived, the new version would come out and I just want a new one. So I basically, you know, instead I asked for a copy of Marvel Superheroes HeroClix or HeroScape instead.
Oh, cool.
So I'm biding my time, and maybe one of the upgraded Asus will be announced by my birthday or something. But I'd be curious. I've got some questions about the tech specs and stuff, and I'd like to talk to someone who actually gets their hands on them.
Sure. I'll be more than happy to help you out with that.
Sweet.
So, Kyle, have you seen one of these around?
No, I haven't. Well, you know, this is such a focal point for technology. Kind of kidding. But, you know, and I did a lot of traveling up to New Hampshire in December. I was in airports quite a bit. And it's just kind of curious to see what kind of laptops people are using. I was curious to see if we'd see these, because I know when I travel, I don't have heavy processing demands. And this seems like a really nice niche to work in. So, I'm just curious to see. No, I haven't seen any. I'm curious to check it out again. My bare hands probably would barely fit on the keyboard myself. But, I'd just be curious to see how it plays out in the market. It seems right to me for this kind of laptop.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Especially in stark contrast to the Apple Air, to the
Mac Air.
The Mac Air, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. It's a real sexy laptop. I don't want to spend $1,800 or $1,700 on it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the only thing, is the price point. Otherwise, you know, I've been looking for a small form factor type of tablet PC, I guess you could call them, or just an internet PC that I could, you know, comfortably hold on my lap or take on long trips and that kind of thing, just to access the internet and maybe do some light document stuff. I'll be able to do a review of the Asus Triple E, but also my brother has this Toshiba, which has about a 7-inch screen. That looked pretty cool, and it's got a full QWERTY keyboard and a swivel monitor, which was kind of neat, and it turns into a little tablet PC. You know, with the advent of Mac Air, that also looks appealing to me. Again, the price point is just too much, actually, and I think the Apple stock has taken a hit the past couple of days just because of the, you know, all the stuff coming out of the Macworld conference. It was just kind of not interesting or inspiring, so the Apple stock kind of took a hit in the past couple of days. But I am looking for a small form factor type of PC just to get rid of, you know, I'm lugging around maybe 6-7 pounds on my shoulder, and you do that all day long, it tends to wear on you, you know? So.
Well, that's where I'm at a big disadvantage, being 6'2" and more pounds than I'm going to announce to the world. You know, 6 pounds of me is nothing.
Right.
And, you know, I'm not going to buy a computer that's worth more than the car I drive.
Yeah, yeah.
But then I am a frugal sort.
Well, I think that's one of the things about open source guys, too. So am I. I'm pretty frugal with my money, and maybe that might be my own upbringing and that kind of thing. But, again, these small form factor laptops can get a little out of hand, especially if they're, made by Mac or Sony. You know, those guys are, you know, they're beautiful looking pieces of hardware, but do they have to price them up so high, you know, for this little tiny thing that you're only going to use for the internet and maybe some light document stuff, you know? So anyway, I'm ranting. So let's go on. Was that your last article there, Peter?
That was the last one I had, but I think you had one more little blog or forum post or something.
Oh, yeah. There was I just want to highlight this little thing that I saw on Dig the other day about...
What? Was this supposed to be real, or was this a joke, or someone pretending to be a joke, or what?
That's a good question, because I wondered that myself. Anyway, this article is saying something about why Linux will not displace Windows, and apparently there is this user, apparently a Windows user, maybe a Windows user, who knows, saying that it's preposterous that Linux could run on a computer without Windows underneath it. And he just goes on and on about how Microsoft spent so much money and time to create Vista and, you know, this freeware called Linux, quote-unquote freeware, would be able to do the same thing. So anyway, I don't know how many people are actually thinking this, you know, but I would think that they would have, you know, no idea whatsoever about technology. But this must be a joke.
I don't, you know, when I was reading that, I kept on asking myself, is it a joke or not? I mean, can we go ahead and read the whole thing? It's not that long.
Yeah. Oh, well, let me get it out here. It says,
you know, you could easily see somebody in, you know, an executive position making these sort of, you know, statements. I can imagine some of my clients actually thinking just like this, and some of these other statements towards the end. Why don't you read it through and then
All right.
We can pick it apart.
Okay. It starts off with, "You are kidding, aren't you? Are you saying that this Linux can run on a computer without Windows underneath it at all? As in, without a boot disk, without any drivers, and without any services? That sounds preposterous to me. If it were true, and I doubt it, then companies would be selling computers without Windows. And this is clearly not happening. So there must be some error in your calculations. I hope you realize that Windows is more than just Office. It's a whole system that it's a whole system that runs a computer from start to finish. And that is a very difficult thing to achieve. A lot of people don't realize this. Here's the kicker for me. Microsoft just spent $9 billion and many years to create Vista. So it does not sound reasonable that some new alternative could just snap into existence overnight like that. It would take billions of dollars and a massive effort to achieve. IBM tried it and spent a huge amount of money developing OS 2, but could never keep up with Windows. Apple tried it and tried to create their own system for years, but finally gave up and recently moved to Intel and Microsoft. It's just not possible that a freeware like Linux could be extended to the point where it runs the entire computer from start to finish without using some of the more critical parts of Windows. Not possible, and I think you need to re-examine your assumptions."
Yeah, and that was posted by a user on the system named Jerry Lee Cooper.
Yeah.
And to Jerry Lee Cooper, I would like to award the Idiot of the Day. So, yeah, well, I'd like to just comment to this. You know, are you saying that Linux can run a computer without Windows underneath it at all? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes, absolutely. That sounds preposterous. Okay, you're dumb. You know, if it were true, then companies would be selling computers without a Windows. And I said, yeah, have you heard of Macintosh? Of course, apparently he does. And he says later that, you know, even Apple tried to create their own system for years. Dude, they were pretty successful.
Yeah, they were.
And then they said they gave up and moved to Intel and Microsoft. Well, yes, they moved to Intel, but they didn't move to Microsoft. I mean, the OS X operating system still runs separately. The reason that line got my attention is because in the little software company that I own, we got a very similar email from one of our potential customers, because he wanted to know what the future of the software package was now that, quote, Apple had gotten out of the computer business. you know, just stuff like this. I don't know. I'm inclined to think that this is a joke, but I could see that there are people out there who are this, you know, so uninformed that they think this is the way that things really are.
Well, you know, it's almost like pouring a bunch of ideas into a blender, putting it on pure E for 10 minutes, and you end up with these five paragraphs. it doesn't come to any kind of cohesive or meaningful point. The fact that companies do any, I don't know, is it really $9 billion that they spend on Vista? If it really is, I wish I had a spigot up to that revenue flow.
Yep.
But, you know, even if it is, even if they did all that, you know, so therefore it is. No, not necessarily. You know, this goes back to that whole Stedman, the cathedral and the bizarre argument. It doesn't really come together at all.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't. And I really tend to think that this may be a joke. Also, this little comment here was written last year on, let's see, January, February,
it was
March.
Almost a year ago.
Yeah, March 14th.
March.
So I don't know if they had started selling Ubuntu on Dells yet or not, but no, I think that was just recently that they started doing that, maybe sometime in the summer. So it may have been before that. So, you know, I give them a little bit of leeway on that, but it's got to be a little joke. So in any event, it does bring a little attention to Linux and that kind of thing. So,
Hey, guys, I just want to jump in here.
Yeah.
So I went to a open office for my last consulting gig, and I got to tell you, it's not like, you know, this is going to shift the whole market, but boy, was I impressed at how well designed, how that's a really strong package. I thought I was always going to have to work with Microsoft Office. And this I've just put out there in general. Open Office is surprisingly robust, plays well with Office formats, and I'm comfortable now making it my official platform, if you will, for all my Office documentation.
That's cool.
Great. Yeah, I happen to like OpenOffice myself. There are a couple of things that I miss about PowerPoint in specific, you know, the specific package. There are a couple of things in PowerPoint that I miss, but overall, I think, you know, and basically I use OpenOffice, you know, for all my other needs anyway, but there are a couple of things.
You know, what I found is this features that I missed, I found OpenOffice has a different way of expressing them, and more often than not, it's a better way. They've taken the model and retooled it more logically, in my opinion. Okay, hey, guys, I got to run.
All right. Well,
all right.
Being elbow to elbow with open source legends has made today truly extraordinary.
Thanks for joining us, Kyle. That was Kyle Skrinak. And have a great day, and thanks for joining us once again.
Oh, thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, Peter, it's just me and you. And so you have this ongoing bet that I hear that you have. you have the link here, Vista successor Windows 7 to be released next year.
Yeah, I made the bet, but I don't know if officially if it's been accepted yet.
Oh.
Yeah, what started out late last year sometime, I heard that... I heard on Buzz Out Loud, I guess some listener emailed in and hypothesized that Microsoft's new version of Windows, the successor to Vista, was actually in the works, and that you know, we could expect to see it sometime in 2009. And the joke was, you know, my comment was that this would cement Vista as Windows ME Professional. The joke being that, you know, ME was the redheaded stepchild that Microsoft didn't want to really, you know, have anything to do with. They just put it out there. It was a total joke. It was bloatware. It was unstable. And, you know, displayed a lot of the same characteristics that Vista is displaying and for many users. Well, anyway, then what happened was someone wrote into Buzz Out Loud and said that, hey, you know, we think that this is going on. And I said, well, that would be kind of funny if that happened. And then I read an article last week, and I can't remember where it was from. I bookmarked it. And I said, you know, it basically said the same thing, that the preliminary testing version is already in the hands of manufacturers, and they're planning for a late 2009 release. So I Twittered about it, and I said, you know, boy, if this happens, I think it would just be so funny, because then I could basically get away with never having installed Vista on any of my clients' systems, you know, just skipping right over that to the next version, which we would hope would be better. Jason Watkins, he responded on Twitter and said, 2009, never happened. And I said, you know what? I want it to happen so much that I'm willing to bet that it will anyway. And so I said, I bet you $5 that it will. So I blogged about it, and I set my parameters for what constitutes a win. And I'm still waiting for Jason to come back and say, you know, whether he accepts those terms or not. Apparently he had a little trouble reaching me on Twitter. He misspelled my name a few days ago. And I thought he was just shunning me. But anyway.
An old-fashioned Amish shunning, right?
The old-fashioned Amish shunning that he's given me, exactly. But anyway, the idea is that if a new version of Vista, or sorry, a new version of Windows is available, you know, if it's in manufacturers' hands, if you can get it as an OEM version, or if you can buy it on the shelves or whatnot, if it's out there in consumers' hands by the end of 2009, that he'll have to either PayPal me $5 or send me an Amazon gift certificate to the equivalent amount. And he hasn't responded yet, so I don't know how he wants his payment if they don't make the deadline. But there you go.
Well, that's an interesting little premise here. Windows 7 coming out possibly in the near future. Is it it's going to totally replace Vista? Is it a brand new build? Is it something miles different from Vista?
I wouldn't expect. I mean, frankly, we haven't seen, you know, the biggest change that we've seen for, you know, in Vista. I mean, you know, NT4 was different cosmetically from NT3.5. Windows 2000 was different in that it added Active Directory. But, you know, when you're talking about gigantic leaps forward, there never really are. There are generally, you know, small incremental builds. And even though they completely rewrite this or completely rewrite that, they're always starting with the same code base, you know.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. You know, seeing how we haven't heard one peep about it, you know, who knows what it's going to be.
Yeah.
But we shall see.
Yeah, we shall see. And speaking of Vista, I have actually been using Vista quite a bit in the last couple of weeks just to get a feel for it. There are a couple of things that I like about it, and there are some things that I dislike about it. But I'll leave that to another podcast. We can do a review and that kind of thing. But I do agree with what Jason Watkins was saying, is that it's miles better than XP. And I have to agree with him. It is a little bit better if you're using the right hardware and, you know, mm-hmm. you meet or even exceed the hardware requirements. Anyway, just my opinion.
Yep.
That's going to do it for the news this week. And I believe you have a segment coming up about the Goose operating system, or GOS operating system.
Isn't GOS. This is Goose.
That's right. This is the proper FreshUbuntu type pronunciation of that operating system, and the Goose operating system 1.0. 2.0 is out right now. And but you bought your dad an EverX, and we have a segment coming up. So anyway, the segment will be coming up in just a second, and so here it is. Something's really to scare you these days.
Hey everyone, this is Peter. I wanted to do this short little tech segment just while it was kind of fresh in my mind. As we discussed last year, I bought my father an EverX PC, the GPC running the GOS version 1 software. This was the Walmart $200 PC that we'd covered in previous episodes. I gave it to my dad for Christmas, and he was all excited about it, but because of my busy schedule, both social and, you know, professional, I never had a chance to actually install it until just last night. So what I wanted to do is just keep a running audio blog, if you will, about my experiences with it. And basically, we plugged it in yesterday. My dad was moving from an iMac, which I gave to him about 7 years ago. So he started with this Apple iMac in 2000 and has been plugging along on it fine. I mean, he just basically does some web surfing, does his email, sells some stuff on eBay. Every now and then, he likes to scan in some documents and print them. And that was actually the reason that we needed to do an upgrade. His machine has an old 350 megahertz G4 or G3, I even forget now, probably a G3 processor, and was stuck at running, I think we upgraded him to OS 10.3, or maybe it was 10.2 Jaguar, I don't even remember. All I know, it was old. And the reason I know it was old is because we bought a new scanner for him, because the old scanner he had only worked under OS 9 and it was kind of flaky under classic emulation. So we bought a new scanner for him, and the new scanner required OS 10.4 or higher. And it just was to the point, you know, 7-year-old system, how long do you want to keep on upgrading it? So what we did instead was we bought him a new Linux-based system. So the first thing we had to think about was moving all of his documents and information, etc., from the old computer. That was actually pretty easy, because first off, he doesn't have a lot of files, and second, all of his email, he's been using webmail for the past several months, and so, you know, that's all stored up on the server. I toyed with the idea of switching him over to Gmail, and I actually set up a Gmail account for him and got ready to forward it all, you know, forward all of his email over to it. But I decided to try to keep the number of transitions down to a minimum, you know, do things slowly, one at a time. But since he was already using webmail, there really is no change. He was using the Safari web browser, and, you know, obviously I'm going to set him up with Firefox under Linux. But other than that, I mean, webmail is pretty much webmail. We're using Squirrel Mail. I think it's version 1.3-something or 1.4. I forget which his ISP has. And so we didn't really need to make any changes there. And as far as his eBay information and stuff, well, you know, eBay's eBay, so that's going to work just fine. And then there was the matter of his documents. So basically last night I didn't complete the transition because we were there for dinner and I only had about 25 minutes to set it all up. And most of that time was spent helping my dad clean up his desk because it's just covered with so much junk and antiques and postcards and stamps and knickknacks. I just couldn't believe how he would work in that situation. But anyway, we spent most of the time clearing a space, you know, or carving a path through to where the iMac was living. And, you know, we extracted the iMac from its location and put the new machine back in place. We had to change things around a little bit because this is an old, you know, bubble iMac, all in one. So we had to make a little separate room for the box and the new display. And we had to squeeze a little room out for the little speakers, sorry, that come with the GPC. Once we got all that in place, I plugged in his peripherals, his printer, and the scanner, and then obviously the keyboard and mouse, plugged in the network jack, and we were pretty much good to go. I was not able to get the scanner working out of the box, and I had specifically picked this Hewlett-Packard scanner. I forget the model number right now, but I picked it because I had read on some forums where people had very an easy time getting it working with Ubuntu. And since you know, the GOS has all the Ubuntu underpinnings, I figured if it worked with regular Ubuntu, it should work with GOS. Unfortunately, that was not the case right out of the box, so I need to revisit that. But for right now, it detected his DeskJet printer just fine. Did not need to install anything, no special drivers or anything. I just navigated around. Took me a little longer to find my way around the GOS because I'm more used to, you know, the GNOME desktop under Ubuntu. But I was able to find all the same settings. I was able to turn off some of the annoying Enlightenment desktop doodads, their little gadgets or widgets, whatever they call them, that I didn't really care for. It's just, my dad's the kind of guy, he doesn't need a Google search box right on the desktop. You know, so I found the setting that starts that up automatically, and I killed that. Then I went through and customized the little launcher bar, the thing that looks like the OS X dock at the bottom of the screen. And I removed just about every icon that was on there. You know, I removed the Gmail icon, the Blogger icon, the Facebook, all these separate, you know, things that my dad is just never going to use. And I left Firefox, Thunderbird, Rhythmbox, GIMP, and the Xsane scanning utility. And that's it. Because frankly, that's going to cover everything that he ever needs to do. And once I was done with that, we pretty much turned it on, plugged it in, made sure that he could get his email, and I left. So that's the end of round one of my experience and my dad's experiences with GOS version 1. I'm going to keep us posted here, keep an audio blog going along, and I might blog about this in the conventional way also. But for now, that's that. We'll talk to you soon, and let's wish my dad luck.
Okay, so we're back. The segment is done. And so how did you like 1.0, and how does it compare to the Goose 2.0? Or have you downloaded it yet?
I have not yet used version 2.0, so I really don't know. Honestly, I prefer just playing Ubuntu over the Enlightenment desktop as they have it packaged. Yeah. I don't really see how it's going to be that much, you know, easier for a novice user to use. But I'm curious to see what 2.0 looks like. I was actually a little disappointed because I tried to install regular Ubuntu on the system because I figured I was just more familiar with that, so, you know, go with what you know.
Right.
And I couldn't get it to work. And unfortunately, I got the machine like 2 days before Christmas, so I did not have a lot of time to, you know, tweak it and stuff. But basically, once it tried to load GNOME in the graphical portion of the installer, it just, the screen went blank and I got nothing. So I ended up having to go back to, you know, the regular stock GOS install on the system. And, you know, I was able to customize it a little bit. There are a few little desktop gadgets and stuff like that that I just didn't think my dad was ever going to use. So I removed those. And I think, you know, it's going to get the job done. It's not as sexy, not as flashy as OS X. And, you know, it definitely feels out of the box like things are hidden, you know, that it's a little more restricted.
Hmm.
But, you know, I think it'll get the job done.
Cool. Thank you for that segment. And we will be looking forward to updates, like you said, right?
That's the plan.
Cool.
We'll see.
All right. And I may even download a copy of GOS or Goose 2.0 and install it. And now is the time for the Man Page Minute. And this is going to be the second part of sort of an extension of the last one. It's on the find command. And here we go.
Man Page Minute, find, part two. In this segment, I'm going to cover how to use the find command to find a file that has been modified or accessed within a certain time period. For instance, let's say you want to find all of the files in your working directory that have been modified today. To do that, you would use the -m time option. So, for example, I'm going to type find dot to indicate the working directory, dash name star AUP, which is going to find my Audacity projects, and then a dash M time 0, and then hit enter. I'm going to get back one result, and that is the recording for this episode that I just made, because that file has been modified, and it is the only file that has been modified today. Now, the 0 option for mTime is basically a modifier which gets multiplied times 24 hours ago. So 0 means basically today, 1 would be yesterday, 2 for the last 2 days, etc. So you can expand that number out to go farther back in time. This is useful for finding files that have been modified recently. Now, along with the dash M time option, there's the dash A time, which will find all of files that have been accessed during that time period, as opposed to created. So with these two arguments, you can narrow down your find results to search for files that have been accessed or modified within a certain time period. Next time, we'll cover more of the find command. Until then, enjoy.
All right, now it is time for user feedback. And I didn't get a whole lot of feedback today, but I want to highlight one feedback that I got. It's from one user, and this is about that, the article on, the email from the guy who called us Open Source Legends. Thank you very much, Tom. That was the guy's name. And so this person, her name is Tina C., left a comment on freshubuntu.org, and she said, I am a one-handed, I'm going to say person as well, and found these websites. I remember speaking to a vendor once of corded keyboards. He said he sold corded keyboards to the Navy, so submariners can do complex navigation control with one hand. I bet they bought controls that would work for games. Too bad their devices may not be on the open market. So anyway, she left a few links on the website, and I will repost those links again on the post for this podcast as well. But thank you very much to Tina C., who posted those links. We very much appreciate it, and thank you very much. And that is all I have for user comments, except for that one comment from Kyle. Sorry, from Kyle.
Say, we had a lot of user feedback. He was here the whole first part of the show.
Yes, he was here for the whole first part of the show. But he left a very nice long comment on one of our prior episodes from Tape Hiss, and it's at the Blogspot address. I'm going to have to repost this, and I'm pretty sure it'll be okay if I repost this comment on the freshubuntu.org site. I'm going to have to aggregate everything, you know, try to figure out a way to aggregate everything. So anyway, I'll have everybody read that if they want to. It'll be on freshubuntu.org. And of some interesting things that he said. And I really thought Kyle brought a lot of good insight today. What do you think, Peter?
Yeah, it was nice to get his opinions and, you know, his comments. I guess you said, was that, did he originally leave a comment for you on the blog, or was that an email that he sent in?
It's a comment. And
it's a comment. So you can go to check out, so our listeners could go to the website and check out the comment if they wanted to see what he had to say about that episode.
Yeah, and Scott. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yep, they could.
Yeah, I thought it was good.
Yeah, so anyway, I think that's going to cut it for this week. I have nothing else to say besides goodbye. Let me see. Before I leave, the music will be provided by Iota Promenet. Thank you very much for joining us this week. You can email us with comments, and please do email us with comments, questions, suggestions even, about how we can make our podcast better. I don't know how much better it can get, but please email us.
There's
at
always room for improvement.
Always room for improvement. We are humble here. You can email us at freshubuntu@gmail.com, which is sort of a general email. You can email Peter and I, either one of us. And have you been receiving email from listeners?
No. What I seem to be getting is followers on Twitter, which I'm all for.
Yeah, so am I.
If you want to email me and you just want to Twitter me or follow me on Twitter, that's fine. That works.
Yep. Our email address is petern@freshubuntu.org. My email address is harlem@freshubuntu.org. Peter, what's your Twitter handle?
It's twitter.com/Nicolaitis.
And I keep saying this every week that I'm going to to post a link on it, and I never do, and I will this week. I promise. My Twitter homepage, whatever, is twitter.com/Harlem with a capital H-A-R-L-E-M. And some people are following me at Fresh Ubuntu, which is my other Twitter account, but I don't use it that often. And
you should just sync the two of them.
How?
Ugh, dude, you don't read my blog, do you?
I read it. It's too confusing. You use strange graphics and arrows, and
those are pretty pictures. They're supposed to make it simple.
Listen,
we should go over it. It's really not that difficult.
Okay.
One day, maybe we'll. You know what? Why don't the two of us? Why don't we just do that as the upcoming episode of Hacker Public Radio?
Hey, that's a good idea.
I will walk you through the process.
Wonderful idea. We'll do that. So
on that note, check us out periodically. I believe the first week of every month, I will be on the on Hacker Public Radio, hackerpublicradio.org. And I will be dragging my pals into it, Harlem included.
Yes.
Ooh. And I guess what it sounds like is the next episode we're going to be doing something on social networking, and the plan is how to actually implement unified social networking so that you can get all your updates and status notifications and stuff in like one spot.
Wonderful.
Which is what social networking really needs to be.
It really does. So, all right, on that note, we bid you farewell. Thank you very much. Any parting words?
Up and away.
It's a bird. It's a plane. Peter. Thank you very much for joining me. Have a nice day and a wonderful week. And we'll see you again next week. Bye. And we're out.
Whee!
Dance with me across the...